Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles,
and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Tonight comes from a little book, The Wisdom of James Allen, which is a compilation of writings. Came from Blue Dove Press. Siva Krom, who's connected with Prem and Sheila down in San Diego, sends his love, and so do Prem and Sheila as well. As Marge Ranny, all her friends down there, had a lovely visit. The Secret of Health, Success, and Power is the title of this writing. We all remember with what delight as children we listened to the never-tiring fairy tale, how eagerly we followed the fluctuating fortunes of a good boy or girl ever protected in the hour of crisis from the evil machinations of the scheming witch, the cruel giant, or the wicked hag. And our little hearts never faltered for the fate of the hero or heroine, nor did we doubt their ultimate triumph over all their enemies. For we knew that the fairy tales were infallible, and they would never desert those who had concentrated themselves to the good and the true. And what unspeakable joy pulsated within us when the fairy queen, bringing all her magic to bear at the critical moment, scattered all the darkness and trouble and granted them the complete satisfaction of all their hopes, and they were happy ever after. With the accumulating years and an ever-increasing intimacy with the so-called realities of our life, our fairy tale world becomes obliterated, and its wonderful inhabitants were relegated in the archives of memory to the shadowy and the unreal. And we thought we were wise and strong, and thus leaving forever the land of childish dreams. But as we re-become little children in the wondrous world of wisdom, we shall return again to the inspiring dreams of childhood and find that they are, after all, realities. The fairy folk, so small and nearly always invisible, yet possessed of an all-conquering and magical power, who bestow upon the good, the health, wealth, and happiness, along with the gifts of nature, in lavish profusion, start again into reality and become immortalized in the soul realm of him who, by growth and wisdom, has entered into the knowledge of the power of thought and the laws which govern the inner world of being. To him the fairies live again as thought people, thought messengers, thought powers, in working harmony with the overruling good. And they who, day by day, endeavor to harmonize their hearts with the heart of the supreme good, do in reality acquire true health, wealth, and happiness. There is no protection to compare with goodness, and by goodness I do not mean a mere outward conformity to the rules of morality,
I mean pure thought, noble inspiration, unselfish love, and freedom from vainglory. To dwell continually in good thoughts is to throw around oneself a psychic atmosphere of sweetness and power, which leaves its impress upon all who come in contact with it. As the rising sun puts to rout the helpless shadows, so are all the impotent forces of evil put to flight by the searching rays of positive thought, which shine forth from a heart made strong in purity and faith. Where there is sterling faith, an uncompromising purity, there is health, there is success, there is power. In such a one, disease, failure, and disaster can find no lodging, for there is nothing on which they can feed. Even physical conditions are largely determined by mental states, and to this truth the scientific world is rapidly being drawn. The old materialistic belief that we are what our body makes us is rapidly passing away, and is being replaced by the inspiring belief that we are superior to our body, and that our body is what we make it by the power of thought. People everywhere are ceasing to believe that a person is despairing because they are ill, and are coming to understand that they are ill because they are despairing. And in the near future, the fact that all disease has its origins in the mind will become common knowledge. There is no evil in the universe, but has its roots and origins in the mind. And sin, sickness, sorrow, and affliction do not, in reality, belong to the universal order, are not inherent in the nature of things, but are direct outcome of our ignorance of the right relation of things. According to tradition, there once lived in India a school of philosophers who led a life of such absolute purity and simplicity that they commonly reached the age of 150 years, and to fall sick was looked upon by them as an unpardonable disgrace, for it was considered to indicate a violation of law. The sooner we realize and acknowledge that sickness, far from being the arbitrary visitation of an offended God or the test of an unwise providence, is the result of our own error or sin, the sooner shall we enter upon the highway of health. Disease comes to those who attract it, to those whose minds and bodies are receptive to it, and flees from those whose strong, pure, and positive thought sphere generates healing and life-giving currents. If you are given to anger, worry, jealousy, greed, or any other inharmonious states of mind, and expect perfect physical health, you're expecting the impossible, for you are continually sowing the seeds of disease in your mind. Such conditions of mind are carefully shunned by the wise one, for he or she knows them to be far more dangerous than a bad drain or an infected house. If you would be free from all physical aches and pains and would enjoy perfect physical harmony, then put your mind in order and harmonize your thoughts. Think joyful thoughts. Think loving thoughts. Allow the elixir of goodwill to flow through your veins, and you will need no other medicine. Put away your jealousies, your suspicions, your worries, your hatreds, and your self-indulgences, and you will put away your illness, your fatigue, your nervousness, and aching joints. If you will persist in clinging to these debilitating and demoralizing habits of mind, then do not complain when your body is laid low with sickness. The following story illustrates the close relationship between habits of the mind and bodily conditions. A certain man was afflicted with a painful disease, and he tried one physician after another, but all to no purpose. He then visited towns which were famous for their curative waters, and after having bathed in them all, his disease was more painful than ever. One night he dreamed that a presence came to him and said, "Brother, hast thou tried all the means of cure?" And he replied, "I have tried all." "Nay," said the presence, "come with me, and I will show thee a healing bath that has escaped thy notice." The afflicted man followed, and the presence led him to a clear pool of water and said, "Purge thyself in this water, and thou shalt surely recover, and thereupon vanished. The man plunged into the water, and on coming out, lo, his disease had left him. And at the same moment he saw written upon the pool the word renounce. Upon waking, the full meaning of his dream flashed across his mind, and looking within, he discovered that he had all along been a victim to an enervating indulgence, and he vowed that he would renounce it forever. He carried out his vow, and from that day his affliction began to leave him, and in a short time he was restored to health. Cut out an article from the newspaper titled "A Focus on Reprogramming the Brain." Researchers work to retrain organ to overcome problems. Do genes determine your brain's abilities, or can you retrain the brain to surmount inherited problems, such as helping a learning impaired child to read? Neuroscientist Michael Mersenich has proved that the special training focusing on specific brain regions can help some children with dyslexia and other language-related disabilities to learn. Sophisticated neural imaging shows that the retraining using computerized educational games leads to physical changes in the brain. If it works for dyslexia, Mersenich reasons, why not for more profound neurological disorders like autism or schizophrenia? His theory, such disorders aren't simply inherited illnesses. Instead, they are inherited brain weaknesses that turn into full-blown disorders only when the ever-changing brain essentially gets stuck in the wrong gear, and that it might be possible to reverse. Quote, there is a real prospect of understanding these conditions through understanding the brain as an operational machine that in a sense creates its own capacities, explains Mersenich of the University of California, San Francisco. It sounds provocative, but as Mersenich discusses the latest research at a National Institute of Health meeting last week, neuroscientists said recent years have brought widespread agreement that the brain's plasticity continually changes, that lets us learn new things every day, and sometimes veers out of control, causing developmental disorders once attributed solely to bad genes. The challenge now is to understand normal learning well enough to interfere with plasticity goes bad. Mersenich calls it raising a brain. Think of it as a brain as a changeable computer. At birth, much of the hardware isn't hooked up, and little software is running. But the brain physically changes as it learns, and each change enables new learning and more changes. Evolution built on experience. Take vision. Newborns see very little. Day by day, messages sent from the eyes to the region in the back of the brain literally hook up neural vision capacity until babies can see normally. But studies of monkeys show patching over one eye makes the brain rewire itself to see only with the uncovered one. It is a use-it-or-lose-it game during development, says Harvard Medical School's Clara Schartz. Change isn't limited to childhood. Other scientists have painstakingly counted how many new brain cells grow in adult rats. Very few if they are kept in plain, boring cages, but lots if they learn to use exercise wheels. In humans, brain scanning MRI machines show regions involved in playing music, for example, grow and become intricately wired during practice. But a genetic flaw can knock the whole cycle off kilter, and that's where the remedial work comes in. Of course, in this article, we are hearing a recap of what yogic science teaches us. And that is that the brain is programmable. It's changeable. through intelligent use of will, we can increase the evolution of the brain. And this is what our Kriya practice does, our meditation, and reprogramming the brain. We have all come into this life with different patterns set in our mind through past lifetimes. And so we choose a body accordingly. Master says that when a sperm and an ovum come together and form one cell, it emits an astral light. And from that light are attracted different souls that have potential harmony with that genetic pattern, with those parents, with the environment that that soul will come into. And there's actually a competition for souls to get into that one particular cell in order to create a body. As the body is created, the soul begins to imprint its pattern upon the brain's pattern, the development of the fetus. And little bit by little bit, the fetus begins to reflect more and more the specific patterns that that soul brings with it. And so inherent within every soul comes these genetic predispositions. But through the power of the mind, we can change and modify the brain. The brain learns. It becomes rewired, so to speak, depending on how we use it. A very interesting study done at the University of Washington showed that Japanese nationals, when as babies, could recognize the difference between the sound of L and R. By the time they had learned their own Japanese language, which doesn't have those sounds, they lost the capacity to recognize the differentiation between those. The idea was very much as the one put forward here. The brain is built with all this capacity for all these different connections. And as you use these connections, they get hooked up, so to speak. They get activated. And with that comes that ability. But we use very little of our brain, really. We use very little of our capacity. And the potential for the human brain, the potential for activating these various latent capacities, potentials, are tremendous. And the most tremendous one out of all of them is our capacity for realizing and knowing God. It is very interesting when you begin to look at thought patterns and how they influence what we draw to ourselves. Not only are we hooking up various capacities within the brain as we learn new things, but we are like a magnet that draws different experiences to ourselves. This is largely determined by karma in an unconscious being. That is, someone who comes into this life and is not aware of their soul potential, their soul possibility. They are just simply living in the world moment to moment, and they go along with the programming from their subconscious mind. And through our thought patterns, we act as a magnet that draw people, situations of all kinds to us that match our pattern, that match the magnetism that we set up within ourselves. So as we wire the brain, it is like wiring a sophisticated magnet that will draw certain people and situations to us and not others. And so this happens on the mental or the causal level. And it's as if we send out some kind of an attractive aura that goes out from us. And we pull people and situations to us, as I said before. And through that, and through those experiences, we learn. And we can have a choice of what to learn in any particular situation. Either we can allow that situation to teach us that this is this outer reality is who we really are. Or we can use it as a means for going within, learning that we are beyond all worldly things. As Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else will be added unto you. By seeking the light that is within us, we plug in the brain to the highest voltage, the highest capacity, the pure light that is the creator of everything else. All material creation, all forms, all expressions that we see around us are subcategories that have come out of this one vast universal consciousness. Marge was telling me about a certain Swami that she followed at one time, who was talking about his own reluctance at going into the formless, because he felt that there he would lose what he had in terms of the form. Now, this is pure ego speaking at this point, because what you realize once you transcend the form and go into the formless is that the form is an expression of the formless. It's a subcategory of the formless. It's a part, an intimate part of the formless. And by going into the absolute and formless aspect of God, you also are the form. And you are both. And so you have the completeness then of both the formless aspect and the form. Now, how do you experience that within yourself? Let us say you're going about your day and you have a certain routine that you are involved in doing. As you do so, you've had a wonderful meditation that morning. And in that meditation, you felt yourself in connection with pure spirit. That connection continues on as you enter into the activities of the day. You feel yourself as pure spirit, and you feel yourself as a form, as a body, who is walking through this earth, through the atmosphere, on this earth, carrying out your various activities. Within the stillness, within the formless, you feel unaffected by anything going on in your world. You feel the joy, the peace, the perfection and purity of spirit. You also feel that that is expressing, that pure spirit is expressing itself through you in your thoughts and through the flow of your own thoughts. From that comes the energy that then activates and allows your body motion. And you feel that pure spirit moving through you as a joyful expression of life energy through your body. And lastly, you feel this physical body moving in the earth, going through all the activities that it goes through. You are simultaneously aware of the absolute formless aspect of yourself, pure peace, without any motion, without any effect of by the things that you're doing in this world. And you are feeling the expression come through the mental, the causal, in other words, and the astral or the electrical body, and the physical. And it is all one harmonious flow. And through that expression, you feel complete, whole, one, not only with yourself, not only with your body and spirit, but with all the world, because you recognize that vibration through this mystical union through which everything is a part of you and a part of this universal consciousness. That is the universal vision. You feel that you are an expression of the infinite spirit, and that everything else that you see, everything else that you experience, is also an expression of that same infinite spirit. It is not simply a mental projection. You are experiencing it. You are feeling it. You're in the midst of this flow. And through this mystical vision, this mystical experience, you have this universal sense of life and all of life. To have that continuously and spontaneously is the Sahaja Samadhi state. It is the state that we are all aspiring for. in order to arrive at that state, in order to get to that state, we start with training the mind first by focusing it on God. There are many of us that are interested in having certain things in the world, having certain material things. Of course, we need a certain amount of money. We need a certain amount of material things in order to live in this world. We need a place to live, clothes to wear, perhaps a vehicle to drive or an ability to get to some mass transit, however that works for us. And so we have these material needs. And we oftentimes see that in contradistinction to our spiritual needs. And we feel ourselves in this bind, so to speak. We feel ourselves in a flux between our material needs and our spiritual desire for our oneness with God. This is really a false notion, because as we've talked about before, we come to the realization that all expression, all materiality is an expression of the divine consciousness. And because of that, it too is divine. Now, why is it seen as an obstacle? Why is it seen in distinction from the spiritual? It is because we have trained ourselves to become so immersed in this world and the things of this world that we have grown forgetful of our spiritual nature. The mind is so taken up with the impulses that come from the nerves that gives us windows to this material world that we have forgotten that we are a soul, we are spirit in essence. And because of that, we are separated from this great spiritual formless aspect that I was describing earlier. Therefore, on the way up, we cut ourselves off, at least during meditation practice and other times, from the world of the senses, in order to get completely focused on the spiritual aspect of what we truly are and who we truly are. And so we take this yoni approach. We cut away the things of the world. We say, I'm not this body. I have a body, but I'm not this body. I have emotions, but I am not these emotions. I have thoughts, but I am not these thoughts. We cut them away. We cut them away. So that what stands revealed is that pure aspect of spirit, that pure, formless intelligence and light of our being, of which we are all a part. And it is through that yoni process of cutting away that's necessary at times in our sadhana that brings us into the fullness of our spiritual selves. But it is also necessary, as I say, for us to be able to have our material life, to be able to have material needs met. And so if we see ourselves with legitimate purpose, with legitimate need for material things to come to us, for money, for clothes, for our material, all of our material needs being met, and see that as God, see that too as our part of our inheritance, that God comes to us as all abundance spiritually, and that is upliftment in spirit, mentally, through creative ideas, through apprehension of truth through the mind, emotionally, by thoughts or by feelings of love and bliss and joy, and physically, through pure health and good health, that this is all part of our inheritance. And we need not divide ourselves up and feel bad or guilty, or that the physical world shouldn't mean anything to us at all. But rather, this world is part of our inheritance. As Babaji said, that it's not known by many that the material needs are also effortlessly met by the yogi who has trained his mind upon God, and so that the material world is seen in its proper perspective, that it is seen as the footstool of God, and not the God that we have made it into. And this is the essential distinction, the essential difference, that we see that this world is the footstool, but it is a divine footstool. God's feet rest upon it, therefore it's good, and there's nothing wrong with it. This magnetization that we build within ourselves attracts to us all of our good. Now, there are many books and there are many teachers who talk about ways to magnetically draw your good to you in terms of materiality, to get wealthy, to get abundance, and all the rest of it. Most of them focus upon the mind alone. And thinking good thoughts, thinking positive thoughts, thinking attractive thoughts of drawing your good to you. The problem with this is that it leaves you short, oftentimes, of the conflict that many of us find ourselves in. And that is that we, especially as spiritual aspirants, have a feeling that if we enter too far into the material world, that we will cut ourselves off from the spiritual world. And so even though we know that we need these material goods coming to us, we have legitimate needs, it's part of our inheritance, nevertheless, as we work to draw these things to us, an oppositional force rises up inside of us. It says, you know, I really shouldn't be focused so much on these material things. If I do, I'll get lost. Whether those thoughts are articulated in the mind or whether they reside deeper in our unconscious, it provides a conflict for us. And so we don't get what we're looking for. We don't get that prosperity flowing to us because we're not fully aligned with our good coming to us. So in addition to creating good and positive thoughts, we also, on a feeling level, have to address that our good can also come to us. Now, one of the simplest ways to do this is to, with eyes open or closed, just sense the aura around you. And your aura resides about arm's length outside of you and all around you. And as you sense that aura around you, get a feeling, get a sense for how open are you for your good to flow to you, for spiritual prosperity to flow to you, for mental prosperity of creative, positive, true thoughts, for emotional prosperity to flow to you, love, joy, for physical prosperity, healthy body, the things of this world, all the goods of this world to flow to you. By making an assessment, and oftentimes it doesn't take very long, you can sense how open or closed you are. Sense all around you, front, to the left, to the right, and behind you. And just sense for your openness. Are you magnetically drawing to you all of your good? Or do you feel blocked off? Do you feel closed off? Is there fear or is there worry or are there conflicting thoughts that keep you from drawing all of your good to you? As you sense that openness, let's say perchance that you have a little bit of closeness, and you sense that and you can feel it just by putting your mind out around your aura and sensing your openness. And if you feel an area of closeness, just sense whether there's any associated thoughts that go with that feeling of closeness. And then open those thoughts to the light of your own being. Surrender those thoughts to the light of your own being. they may break loose and you feel a shift in the energy pattern around you, or you may find that they resist getting moved at all. And this is to every level of prosperity. This is your spiritual level, your bliss, your joy, your intuitive wisdom coming to you. Mentally, creative thoughts, and thoughts of truth flowing to you. Emotionally, your joy, your bliss, your love flowing to you. Physically, life energy, that you have lots of energy for living this life. Materially, all things flowing to you. And as you work with this, and work with this openness that you have, or the closeness, just breathe into your whole system and feel to the greatest extent that you can that the spiritual magnetism that's within you is drawing all of your good to you. It's bringing everything to you. And open yourself to the greatest degree possible in every direction, front, left, right, side, and back, and particularly in your back, and feeling your supply come to you, and through you, through the prosperity that you have, that you're able to give, you're able to pass that on to others, that there is no need to hoard if you feel a sense of closeness or clinging. There's no sense of that. It's an even flow. It's not being overly excited about it. There's a calmness about it, a power. You see, within the calmness, that's not part of the excited brain. You increase the feeling of flow, you increase the feeling of power coming to you. And that power of magnetization increases. And when you put your mind fully on God and know that He is sending everything to you that's necessary for your success, for your good, to your ability to give to others and be a conduit of spirit, of creative thoughts, of love and joy, of material prosperity, and that it is unlimited. You see, the material mind looks around and it says, there's only limitation, there's only so much. But the divine mind knows that there is unlimited supply, unlimited creativity, unlimited potential. And you can be receptive to everything that is intended for you. Everything of your own good. And by keeping your mind on God, God will direct your thoughts as to what your good is and draw to you all of your good in great abundance. And some people come with smaller desires, smaller needs, and they don't provide for many others. And others create huge realms of creativity so that they may give to many, many others. And that can be true spiritually, it can be true mentally, it can be true emotionally, it can be true physically. And it can vary on different levels. There have been those souls who have had tremendous spiritual wealth, tremendous mental wealth, but materially, they have been very little, needed very little, attracted very little. There are those who attract tremendous material prosperity to themselves. but have very little to offer spiritually or mentally or emotionally. The balanced man is open to all of these levels, flowing to him and through him and expressing itself to the universe. And it is all Ananda. It is all bliss. It is all God. And when you connect every level with God, you see, there is no separation. You don't have to worry about becoming separated from God by having abundance on any level. But rather, your abundance is God giving himself to you, through you, within you, all about you, because God is all of life, and all of life is God. And the more you see yourself as this divine being, magnetically drawing all your good to you, the more you begin, just like a magnet, to draw things to yourself. The more you let it come to you and through you and out from you, the more even flow comes to you. Everything that you need to fulfill the reason and the purpose for why you have come here to this particular physical manifestation, all of your good is available to you. There is no limit to it. But your joy is in the joy of receiving and giving, whatever that is, however God chooses to give and to project through you. So let me just stop there and see if there's any thoughts or questions about this.
Seems like every time I do it, there's very instant and powerful. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Change.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought comes, am I really doing anything, or is my mind just avoiding it completely and just saying, yeah, you're doing it. I don't actually address these questions in that kind of sense.
Because
there's very little resistance, and some things come up, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wonder, you know, the thought comes, am I actually dealing with this thing, or is it an illusion of the mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in that moment, you have that receptivity. So the other part of it is, as you go about your daily life, do you feel that same kind of receptivity? Or do you feel at times that you close down to it? Are there times when you feel overwhelmed with things, and that fear tends to shrink us, to make us smaller? And along with that, our life force, our abundance on every level tends to shrink with it. And so, is it a consistent, ongoing sense that I'm open to all of my good? The other thing then is the evidence, the proof. Do you have all of your good flowing to you? Do you feel that way? And as I said, every soul is different. And during our lifetime, we go through different needs, what we're intended to bring to the party. So it's not that we have to drive a big fancy car as proof that, you know, we have our material abundance coming to us. It can be, I'm sufficient for the moment. This is what I need for this moment. And I'm satisfied with them. And it's not, I'm satisfied with getting any kind of crumbs off the table that I can get. No, I'm truly, I feel right about everything that I have. I have everything that I need in this moment. And if that's the case, then that's the evidence that you are open to everything that you need. And again, it's checking through every level, the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, and the physical, and having that flow. So two things. One is, in this moment, it feels good to me. I feel open to everything flowing to me. And then the other thing is taking a look, am I consistent with that as I live my day? And am I open to my life energy flowing to me? You know, sometimes we can get in a work situation and we just feel worn out and beat up from our work situation. I would say in all likelihood, we're not very open to our life energy. There's some thought pattern that's closing it off, and that's why we feel so worn out from what we're doing. It's not because we're actively expending energy, because we have potential for infinite energy to flow through us. And if we're really in harmony with what and who we should be, we'll have that infinite supply available to us. And again, we don't have to be bouncing off the walls. It's sufficient for what we have. In fact, it's a calm, smooth, clear energy. So look for the evidence, the consistency in the evidence. Do I have that all the time? If we have, you've arrived. That's great. That's how we should live.
David, I've kind of had this recurring vision over and over for years, and that's where that's very attractive. It's just where I'm a simple man and I just don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I barely have a shack to live in, and the only clothes I have are the clothes that I'm wearing. And this vision was always enormously appealing. And it's a paradox, because in my mind, the less I have, in the outer sense, the more I have, the more simple and the less, you know, the more. I don't know if you've ever meditated and you just wanted to be a simple person. You know, like the simpler the better. Like, almost like you have nothing but God. You know? And I don't know if that, you know, cuts you off from anything or not, but sure, always seems very appealing.
And we're complex, aren't we? Because that's not always our state.
No,
because then we have these other places where...
It's not usually my state. It's a very appealing state, and it comes along on a regular basis, and it has for years. As long as I can remember.
This would be one thing that I would run that through. And that is, in picturing a very simple state like that, do I feel more open to my spiritual good flowing to me?
Oh, yeah.
That's
why it's always perceived as a wonderful thing. But it's not even like a conscious thought, like I'm going to be more in tune with God. It's more like when I get this vision, it just is that way.
Right. So then the other side of that is then when you enter into the complexity of your own life and all the demands and everything, do you feel more cut off from your spiritual good and the infinite supply of spiritual good flowing to you?
Sometimes that when the demands of the day start coming harder and faster, almost more than you can keep up with, sometimes it seems hard to keep your mind on God.
So then what I have thought to do with that in the past, then, is to become inwardly simple, even while I'm living a complex life. And so that I am attracting to myself an infinite supply of spiritual goodness coming to me. And I can do that by just slowing down, by mentally picturing myself in that very simple state. Even though my outward life, I might be wearing a suit. I might be going to a meeting. I might be...
Phones are ringing
and all of that.
Questions.
But inwardly, I'm very simple.
And you can do that, and it has this amazing effect of just your spiritual good flowing to you. And you feel that. And you're attuned to that. And that is where these cross currents can foul us up. Because we have material needs, and we want this material good, but we oftentimes see that in opposition to our spiritual good coming to us.
Yeah, we've got some mental game we play. You were just saying that fear constricts us, and it makes mm-hmm. the possibilities smaller, and it cuts off our creativity and our flow at all mm-hmm. different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And fear isn't the only emotion that'll do that.
Right.
Sometimes becoming too busy,
mm-hmm.
mentally busy, will do the same thing. Or there's other emotional states that have the same effect.
I had to take myself in hand because I was complaining about being too busy, but I kept on creating more busyness for myself.
All of us. Very few of us are truly busy from the world.
Yeah.
We're busy from our own creation.
Right.
And then you get a cell phone and some other odds and ends just to make sure that you never have a rest.
Right. Exactly right. And so I had to take myself in hand and see that I look at what I'm doing here. And what is my purpose? Why do I keep adding on additional things to myself when I already am saying that I'm too busy and I don't have enough time?
You correct me, but I suspect it's the ego not wanting there to be any peace.
Yeah. I think that we get afraid. What if I slow down?
Right.
This house of cards will collapse if I slow down. And whether it's conscious or not.
Peace equals death in the ego.
Right.
Mind.
The ego operates primarily out of the rajasic and the tamasic.
Right.
And the tamasic is that death. It's that obliteration. It's that nothingness. And when it thinks of peace, it thinks of tamasic.
Right.
Oh, well, I don't care then. And, nothing will happen. I'll sit in my bathrobe and I'll watch I'll Love a Lucy reruns all day long.
Right. No life energy.
You know, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
No life energy. Whereas peace is a very, very active, vital
Correct.
Place to be in a sattvic kind of mood.
That was the problem, I think, with Freud, is all he saw was tamasic and rajasic.
Yeah.
And there was no sattvic.
There wasn't. Although he had a wonderful saying, and he thought that the real purpose of life was to love and to work.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. So it is understanding that we have these competing and seemingly opposite desires inside of us, and being able to work our way through that there's and understand ourselves. When we make busyness for ourselves and we can't allow ourselves to relax, that there's something at operation there, probably a fear.
Right.
Probably a fear. And what would it be like to actually let go? And when we feel that peace, we don't feel dead. We don't feel incapacitated. That's the other thing the ego tells us, is that we'll become incapacitated. And it tells us that all the time with spiritual experiences. Well, you won't be able to take care of your life. You won't be able to earn an income. You won't be able
to support your family. Yeah.
All of that. And it's a lack of trust in God that He will arrange everything in the proper order. And that He'll look after you. He'll take care of you. And when we have that perfect trust, then we can let go. And that letting go allows our abundance, allows our good to come to us. And that holding on constricts us. And it magnetizes things away from us rather than drawing them to us.
You know, I noticed something also with God is when you're tuned in with God, you seem to get, you seem to get everything you need when you need it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you remember, many years ago, they had that concept in manufacturing, the just-in-time inventory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wouldn't stockpile anything.
Mm-hmm.
They would get... You'd get the part just as you were going to put it right on the
right.
the machine. And that's kind of what I think of. And when we want to stockpile things, it's really most of the time out of fear. You know, we're not going to have it when we need it.
Right.
We won't have food.
Right.
And I notice with God, people can, like this peace pilgrim and different people. Or, you know, you're a good example. You quit your job and you just get things when you need them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know where they're going to come from, but they just sort of show up.
It is the trust and being in harmony with God. You know, if you just decide, well, I'll just quit my job and see what comes to me. If you're not in harmony with God's flow, you know, that's that tamasic state. You know, that's sitting around in your bathrobe and waiting for dialing for dollars. You know,
my good friend Bill Bromenschenkel decided that God provides everything, so he was going to quit paying his bills.
Uh-huh.
And he started getting all these phone calls from these different people, and he's going, you know. What's going on here? You know, God's supposed to provide. And time went on and time went on, and things kept getting worse and worse, and finally he went out and got a job. I got a new video.
Yeah. It's an immature understanding of the principles that we're talking about here. But that as you grow in that faith, and it's really harmonizing yourself with the light within you, with God within you, and that's all part of drawing. We can't make a mental game out of it, you know, and make it only a mental game, because we don't set up the magnetization that way. We're not being honest with ourselves, and that's where we need to deeply focus our mind upon God, and what is God's will for me at this time. And for myself, I worked at this agency for 13 years, and before I left that agency and started working full-time for God, so to speak. And there was times when I wondered, well, shouldn't I be leaving here? You know, isn't it time? And no, you know, the red light would show up, and no, it's not time to go. It's not time to go. And off to something else, and I had other offers and other places that would like to hire me away. No, it's not time to go. And then when it was time to go, it was really time to go. It was a complete letting go.
You couldn't do your work.
Yeah, yeah. And so God was guiding me through every single step of it. And so He does provide us for what we need, but we need to be that receptive vehicle too. We need to be in harmony, and we have to do the work to get ourselves into harmony with that. Otherwise, we're just fooling ourselves. It's fanciful thinking. And it's fantasy versus real attunement.
You know, what it's really done is it's made me think about what is wealth and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all probably in this room had experiences where we've tapped into God and you just literally don't need anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You think, you know, this is wealth.
Mm-hmm.
It's true wealth.
And everything else comes from that. If we're in harmony with that, if we're acting according to it, if we're moving according to it, everything that we need comes to us. And so our first and middle and last responsibility is to that light. And it doesn't mean we ignore the world and just quit paying our bills. You know, God's within the bill collector too, I guess. But, you know, it is harmonizing ourselves with the light. And when we do that, then all of our good comes to us. And we can start with positive thoughts and productive thoughts and creative thoughts and just opening ourselves to that abundance. But when that spiritual influx comes and that current is there, that's our highest light. And it's not always easy. There's when I first left my work and I moved into the lovely place that you provided for me. I had been working since I was in the fourth grade. I started cutting asparagus and working on the farms, and I worked at my dad's warehouse from 14 years old on, and those were 80-hour work weeks when I was 14. You know, those were long, long days and nights during the summer. So I was accustomed to earning my living by the sweat of my brow. And this required me to
let that go. And that wasn't the easiest thing for me to do. There was that kind of thought running through my head, I need to earn my living by the sweat of my brow.
And guilt.
Yeah. And so it was letting go of some of that too, because that's how God was organizing my life right then. And then there are other people who need to learn that they need to sweat by their brow to earn a little bit of their bread. So we all have our own things to learn. Yeah. There's a wonderful moment. I remember when I was walking into this agency that I was working at, and there's a lot of layoffs going on, and there's a lot of fear. And as I walked in through the doors, I could feel the whole atmosphere was just charged with this fear, anxiety,
rumors.
Unknown rumors, everything. And as I walked into it, it's like walking into a sea of these vibrations. And so God gave me this wonderful image of this swan that was just floating along the surface, and beneath the surface, the feet were paddling along, you know, just along, down in the mud and the muck and the mire and all the world. It was paddling along, but along the top it was just this beautiful, serene, white swan just gliding along the surface there. And with that image, my mind was just raised up. And out of all of this muck and mire of vibrations, and it was just a serenity that I was floating along as I was walking in there. Every day, that thought of the swan came to my mind, and every day, it just like lifted my mind right up to that serenity. And everything, and that's what I was saying, in that formless aspect, it's unstained, it's untainted by anything that happens in the world. And that's flowing to us all the time. That's part of our inheritance, part of who we are. And so to live and act in the world, to be in the world but not of it, and that's what that is to rise above. And it doesn't mean our feet aren't paddling along and all the worldly concerns, but there's the greater part of us who's floating along on the top. That's serene, it's peaceful, pure. It's quite wonderful. It's a great gift. He wasn't flying, he's floating.
A week or so ago when I was at work, I was wondering how I was going to get everything done. Mm-hmm. Walking from one building to the other, just enjoying that, you know, the sun was shining. Mm-hmm. I looked up and there was either a hawk or an eagle or something that was flying really low. Mm-hmm. There's like woods behind me. And I haven't seen one since I've been in Washington. Mm-hmm. I had a bird of prey. I used to see them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stopped. And it lifted me right up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Out of my, you know, it reminded me to get to go up.
Right. So important, isn't it? Yes, yeah. Whatever reminds us to lift our mind up and above.
We were really low, too. I mean, it was like, it was just right there.
Mm-hmm.
Flew over my building and nested somewhere.
And at any point, we can just, as I was talking about, we can just sense this aura around us, and our openness to all of our good flowing to us. We can start with the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, the physical, and just feeling ourselves drawing to us all of our good. We don't even need to know what that good is. We can be unknowing of all the ways. In fact, it's better to leave it a little open-ended. We don't know all the ways that good can flow to us. And this is where this idea of I needed to earn my living by the sweat of my brow. There needed to be an hourly wage exchange, or there I needed to do a certain thing and then money came to me. This whole exchange kind of philosophy And to shift from that to seeing my good flowing to me. It came to me automatically, spontaneously. My part was to be working for God, to be in His direction, to be His servant, and then He provided everything for me.
Well, when you are God's servant, it doesn't stop with you. You're sort of a conduit for the good.
Mm.
Or a beneficiary, but it flows right out to everyone.
Yeah. But it's different than the material mind thinks about it, or at least the way that my material mind was trained to think about it.
Everything's finite.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just been absolutely wonderful in my own case, and I think that we're all examples of that, because we've come into a country with tremendous abundance. Well, that doesn't happen by mistake. We're part of that group consciousness that has helped to create that. And wealth and abundance has become even more down through the years. What we're lacking perhaps more of is the spiritual abundance, that people rely on the material for their happiness. And because of that, they close themselves off to the spiritual abundance, that natural joy that should be the inheritance of everybody should be there. And we tend to be impoverished in that way. We have people who are lonely, people who are isolated. Relationship-wise, we tend to be more impoverished, and where other countries have great wealth around that. Mm-hmm. And so to balance that out and to reclaim our spiritual inheritance, and not to think that that's something that comes to us after we die, something later. You know, why sow that idea into the world? That's not the deal. The kingdom of heaven is here. It's now. And I think that's the great message that needs to be emblazoned on the minds of everybody. And as you said, when you're in the midst of that abundance, the rest of it almost drops into insignificance. And as the other side of it then is this polarity that we get into, that either we're on the material side or we're on the spiritual side. It can't be a both and. It's an either or. And to change that thinking and to know that our material needs and abundance can flow to us just as greatly as our spiritual can, and that we're open to both. And I think that's where it begins, is that openness, is the effort and the creativity that flows from that, but it's our openness to our abundance on all those levels. And you think about the people who are tired. Oh, I'm so tired. I just got off of work. I'm so tired. It's like a mantra that gets put into the mind. And oh, I'm overwhelmed. I'm tired. I don't have enough time. You think about all of the words that we use that constricts our flow. And it's huge. It's huge. You just listen to everybody's conversation through the day, and you hear so much of that. So it's changing not just our thoughts, but on a feeling level as well, that we're open to that. We feel that life force flowing to us. We feel that creativity flowing to us. We feel that spiritual abundance flowing. And that's our great wealth. Why not? Why not? Well, speaking of spiritual wealth, should we chant for a bit? And if you'd like, I'll chant and you can do a response. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Rama Jai Ram Jai Jai Rama Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace. Bliss.